The Course Radio Network brings you the Roy Green Show. Roy's off this weekend because even Roy needs a break. But great conversations with you don't. Sitting in for Roy is Mike Blanchard. Call 1-800-563-7770 or email mike.blanchard@coursen.com. The Roy Green Show on the Course Radio Network.
All right, welcome back. As you heard, I'm Mike Blanchard. I'm sitting in for Roy Green this weekend on the Roy Green Show. The number to call, 1-800-563-7770. And you can email me at mike.blanchard@coruscant.com. I have an opportunity to take some calls at certain times. By the way, we are going to have one full half hour of open line coming up in the final half hour of the program. Today, that is 1:30 Pacific, 4:30 Eastern Time. As a parent, I think that you would do whatever it takes to ensure the safety of your children. Well, my guest has a few suggestions for anxious parents who may typically hover on the edge of the playground with the first aid kit. Relax. Let your kid lick a 9-volt battery just to see what happens. Let them play with fire, maybe. Gaver Tully is the author of an interesting book called 50 Dangerous Things You Should Let Your Children Do. Gaver, thanks for chatting with us this afternoon.
Hey, it's great to be here.
I don't think you're telling your kids to take a spoon and go play in traffic by any means, but what is the message in this book?
Well, really, despite the provocative title, the message here is really about long-term safety and how important it is for kids to learn how to recognize and mitigate risk for themselves.
What kind of risk?
Well, it ranges from everyday risk of, you know, accidentally cutting yourself with a knife to banging your thumb with a hammer. And the point of the exercises in the book, or the topics in the book, is to give kids and parents a context or a chance to kind of have a rational discussion about danger and safety and how to do things that at first glance might seem dangerous, but in actuality are the kinds of things that, you know, anybody over 40 grew up doing when they were children.
Why is it that a lot of parents who grew up doing a lot of this stuff are, you know, reluctant to let their kids do it? In other words, like I said, take the bubble wrap off the kids and let them experience a few bumps and scrapes.
Yeah, that's a really good question. The best answer I have is that it's a combination of two important factors. One is the instantaneous quality of media coverage these days. If there is a child in peril anywhere, certainly in North America, but pretty much globally now, we hear about it almost instantly. I mean, you only have to look at the Balloon Boy incident to see just how quickly, you know, people in France were up in the middle of the night worrying about Balloon Boy. It's a global phenomenon, and it gives us this continuous impression that children are in peril all the time, you know, that the world is a dangerous place. And in reality, by any measure, it is currently the last 20 to 50 years have been the safest time in the history of civilization for children. it's sort of counterintuitive, but we're really making unsafe children by preventing them from letting them learn how to do these things for themselves.
Not knowing how to do these things for themselves, you just don't have the skill set. Is it are these survival skills, or what exactly
well,
is it?
You know, that would be one way to think of it, but they're kind of everyday survival skills.
Sure.
it's kind of an interesting phenomenon. I've been talking to parents and educators about children in danger for the last 5 or 6 years, and there is no agreement on what activities are dangerous. I mean, any activity can be done in an unsafe way. I mean, like you said, I can give you a spoon and you can go out in traffic and we could blame the spoon or we could blame the traffic, but really the context of the activity was wrong, right? So, you know, I talk to some parents and they don't want to let their kids drive the car, sit on their lap and drive a car, because they don't want to have the kids have the idea that they could go out and drive the car. Well, in reality, kids already know they could go out and drive the car. I mean, they've seen us turn the key enough times. They know the mechanism. The reason they don't go out and drive the car is because they're actually responsible, you know.
How many of us got to sit on mom or dad's lap when we were kids? They'd operate the pedals, we'd operate the car, and man, you do that today. And more recently, I recall the public, I don't know if maybe it was the public outcry, but certainly the media outcry surrounding the irresponsibility of a parent that would allow their kids to do that. Man, we all grew up doing this, Gaver.
Yeah, it's true. And it's not just that the kids are missing out on a kind of empowered childhood. You know, I mean, what a great experience that is to sit behind the wheel when you're, you know, five or six and steer the car around in an empty lot or something like that. But it's really that these activities lay the foundation for kind of creativity and innovative thinking and kind of can-do attitude, you know. These are the things that get kids to engage with the world instead of with their video games.
Just to give our listeners a sense of what the book is all about, and by the way, it's called 50 Dangerous Things You Should Let Your Children Do. I guess you need to qualify what danger is, because and each chapter is in itself an activity. Among them, lick a 9-volt battery. How many? That's how I knew the battery still had a little bit of juice in it. You just put the ends on your tongue, and bam, if you got a little bit of tingle, it was there.
Yeah.
I don't think anybody ever died from licking a 9-volt. I might be wrong, Gaver, but I don't think anybody ever died licking a 9-volt battery.
No, in fact, the worst 9-volt battery injuries I could find were from people putting them in their pockets with change and getting a burn on their leg where the coin shorted out both terminals on the battery. The whole point of lick a 9-volt battery is that, yeah, somehow people have gotten this idea that any experimentation with electricity is dangerous, that, you know, we need to separate kids from this until they have their electrical engineering degrees, and then they can judge whether or not to lick a 9-volt battery. Well, there isn't a child in the world that can't make a distinction between licking a 9-volt battery and sticking the car keys in the electrical outlet.
Yeah.
I mean, the kids really do understand these distinctions. So an activity like licking a 9-volt battery, which has somehow become vilified, is really a great experience for kids to learn about, like, what electricity is and how our bodies sense it, and really how our senses work. So it's a great, like, quick experiment. It's exciting. It's a little bit shocking, you know.
It is. Other chapters in the book, are, among other things, are stick your hand out of the window of a moving vehicle, I'm assuming. Throw a spear, play with the vacuum cleaner, throw rocks, make a rope swing, cook something in the dishwasher, find a beehive. Have you received any negative feedback on this, Gaver? Have you got any backlash from people wondering what the heck it is you're up to?
Well, it's a very interesting thing. For every 100 or so positive emails and blog comments and things like that we get, you know, we get a few people who take umbrage with certain topics. And when parents open the book and start flipping through, there's this immediate upwelling of nostalgia of, I remember when I used to do this, you know, make a fire in the backyard and or, you know, any of these activities that you mentioned, throw a spear. The thing that happens, though, is that for every parent, as they flip through, they hit a topic that they're just not comfortable with, you know. This happened just yesterday at a book signing where mom got to burn stuff with a magnifying glass, and she was comfortable with everything in the book, but she wondered if it would be all right if she tore that page out so that her daughter wouldn't see it. And I said, well, your daughter's going to notice that there's a gap between topic, you know, 17 and topic 19.
Yeah, the sequence just doesn't add up.
Yeah, exactly. But it turned out that her reasons for it was that she had had a very bad experience with a magnifying glass when she was young, where she accidentally started a fire. And it turned out over the course of the story that she had found the magnifying glass and she had been playing with it, and she had set it in such a way that the sunlight came through the window, and later in the day it focused that light onto the floor, and that's how she started the fire. It's not uncommon for people to have these like very personal experiences that mean that, you know, throwing rocks is bad or climbing trees is bad because they had these very intense personal experiences with these activities.
One of the activities you've got, and I don't know how you could be so irresponsible, Gaver, it's to advise your kid, walk home from school.
Yeah. You know, there's a school district in, I think it's in, can't remember, Denver, one of the big cities over there by the Sierras, and they auctioned off the space right in front of the school for parents to drop their kids off as a fundraiser. So if you had a special sticker, you could be one of the, you know, 50 parents allowed to pull into this space to drop off your kids. And this was sort of, you know, I mean, that's a great idea for a fundraiser, whatever. But the real thing is that driving your kids to school, as it turns out, is orders of magnitude more dangerous than letting them walk to school. Like, it, you know, if you look at the rational risk assessment, you know, the risks that you put your child at peril by strapping them into their car seat and putting them in the back of the car far outweigh the possible danger of letting them walk to school.
Well, you know, there's this belief now that any time that kids are out of your sight, they're at risk for being, you know, victims of child predators, or they could be, you know, whisked off the street by, and statistically, you know, the numbers aren't there to back that up.
That's right. That's right. In fact, it's what statisticians call statistically insignificant.
Uh-huh.
It's almost, the chance of your child being kidnapped at any given moment is almost incalculable. It's such a small number. You wouldn't actually be able to calculate the chance on a home calculator. You'd have to use a computer to get a number that small.
A supercomputer or something like that. How many parents do you think would allow their kids to walk home from school, but yet they'd probably be lurking somewhere in the background in the car or whatnot, just keeping tabs just in case? You don't want to...
Well, I mean, there is a quality. As humans, we're really bad, and a guy wrote a really great book recently called Predictably Irrational, Dan O'Reilly, and he talks about how as soon as their emotional risk is great, we overestimate the actual risk. So the tragedy, I mean, just the incalculable tragedy of having your child kidnapped, you know, I could not possibly imagine what that's like. That makes us overinflate the actual risk. But the long-term effect is that these kids don't, and they think that being outside is dangerous. And so they have less and less interest in going outside and being connected to the world. So the long-term cost is that there's no, the kids have no interest in the outside world. They, you know, it's no wonder they turn to Twitter and Facebook and things like this more and more. It's because they're actually prevented from doing things outdoors.
Well, that's a great point. See, I've always been fascinated as a generation that we are very critical of the way young kids are today. It's like, oh, they're too sedentary. They don't get outside enough. But yet we, as their parents, are the ones who don't enable that activity.
That's exactly right. I mean, you know, when I was a kid, you get booted out the back door at, you know, just after breakfast, and your mom says, I don't want to see you till dinner time.
Get out of the house.
Yeah.
It's too nice to be inside. Those sorts of things.
Yeah. And, you know, I think this might be a major part of my next book is the amazing power of boredom to force kids to invent for themselves new kinds of entertainment. You know, I think we really underestimate the value of that, like, laying around in the backyard, like, bored out of your skull until you're forced to invent something to keep yourself entertained, some new thing to do.
Fosters a kid's imagination, that's for sure.
Exactly.
Gaber, have you got a website that people can learn more about your book or check
it
out?
Yeah, they can head right on over to 50dangerousthings.com. And if that's too long to type, they can just type in 50dt.com.
50
D as in D. dog and T as in Tom.
There you go. That's pretty easy.
50dt.
That doesn't sound dangerous at all. Gaber, I appreciate you chatting with us this afternoon. I'll tell you something. I think the approach, it's rather refreshing to hear stuff like this.
Well, thanks. You know, somebody's got to stand up for childhood, I figure, these days.
Oh, man, I'm into that. Gaber, thank you.
Great pleasure.
Gaber Tully, author of 50 Dangerous Things You Should Let Your Children Do. It's like an exercise book. It's like a workbook. There's, of course, as you can guess, there's 50 different chapters, but different activities that you can let your kids. There's even a place for comments. Once it's done, you can field notes, observations, improvements, new ideas, a little checklist when they've accomplished the activity. A lot of course, is certainly tongue-in-cheek, but really, these are a lot of activity. I wonder, you know, what's going on where, as parents, I think a lot of people overprotect their kids sometimes. All right, this is the Roy Green Show. I'm Mike Blanchard sitting in for Roy. We'll be back after we pay a couple of bills. You're listening to the Chorus Radio Network. I don't know where this movement of overprotecting children came from. It's got this impression as adults, it seems that that children, your children, your kids, are in danger just about any time they're not in your sight. And sort of reading about this book that Gaber Tully wrote, this 50 Dangerous Things You Should Let Your Children Do, it all came from the argument that he was saying that he believes that, that overprotected children grow up to be less competent adults because they just don't have the skill set, they don't have the imagination, they don't have the resourcefulness that, you know, children need to or are allowed to or fostered to develop as they're growing up. And sometimes a little less adult supervision is not a bad thing. There's got to be a pushback in that area, you think. I don't know.